Next case is 07209, State Ex Rel, the Ohio General Assembly versus Jennifer Bruner, Secretary of State. Ms. Richards.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Suzanne Richards, and I'm here today on behalf of Relators. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Simply stated, this is a case where the Secretary of State should be compelled to fulfill her clear constitutional and statutory duties with respect to amended substitute Senate Bill 117. Respondent should be compelled for two independent reasons. First, because Senate Bill 117 became a law on January 5, 2007, 10 days after the General Assembly adjourned sine die. Second, because whether you count the 10-day period from presentment or from adjournment, the fact is that Governor Taft filed this bill with the Office of the Secretary of State without written objections. And when he did that, he exercised one of the three options provided by the Constitution. With that filing, his executive authority over Senate Bill 117 ended, and the duties of the Secretary of State began. The first issue, that the bill became law 10 days after adjournment, rests squarely on a reading of Article 2, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution. That language, as this court has said in Maloney, is unmistakably clear. And that unmistakably clear language states that if a bill is not returned by the governor within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after being presented to him, it becomes a law in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the General Assembly by adjournment prevents return, and in that case, in case of adjournment, it becomes law within 10 days after the adjournment, unless written objections are filed by the governor with the Secretary of State's office here.
The General Assembly could, if it wanted, didn't hear, but it could if it wanted to, it could delay submitting a bill to the governor under your statement of the law in a way that would give the governor 1 day, 3 days, 2 days, whatever. The General Assembly wanted to, however, the General Assembly wanted to limit the governor's authority to veto or sign or decide what to do with the bill, could it not?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. First of all, as Your Honor noted, that's not the facts of this case. Second of all, the Constitution itself.
We're interpreting constitutional language that, which is not clear, certainly. I think we all agree with that. It's not terribly clear. So we have to sort of decide what it is the language says, and not just for this case, but to give guidance to the governor and the General Assembly and the Secretary of State in the future. Would you agree with that, certainly?
I do agree that you have to give guidance, but what I probably disagree with, if I understand Your Honor's question, is that the General Assembly could, in fact, cut off or severely limit the ability of the governor to have time to review it. And the reason I say that, Your Honor, is because I think the Constitution itself provides a safeguard against that. Section 15 of Article 2 provides that every bill shall be signed by the presiding officer of each house and shall be presented forthwith to the governor. So what you have is a constitutional mandate that prevents the General Assembly from unduly delaying presentment, and in fact a constitutional requirement that they provide presentment forthwith.
But here, in fact, here the General Assembly did wait, was it 13 or 14 days before it, didn't it? Before submitted the bill to the governor.
No, Your Honor, quite the contrary. This bill was signed by President Harris of the Senate on December 26, 2006, and the very next day, December 27th, 2006, it was presented to the governor. So we have a forthwith presentment here under the facts of this case. Indeed, under the facts of this case, it was a date that was coordinated with the governor's staff.
I was just going to ask that point, and one of the affidavits had indicated that the clerk of the Senate, who apparently was in charge of coordinating with the governor, delivering it to the governor, said they'd met with the governor's staff and agreed that this would be the day. And so do we have a waiver issue here that in terms of this forthwith issue, if that became an issue, that the governor had agreed to this time of presentment?
Well, I think that's a good point, Your Honor. I think what we have here is that the then governor and his staff coordinated the date of presentment. He certainly had, under the facts of this case, he certainly is not saying that his time had been limited. I think we have a situation where factually the Constitution worked exactly as it was intended. Section 15, the forthwith provision, was honored here. And we don't have a situation where there's been a severe limitation. And indeed, I think that if I could address Justice Moyer's point for a moment, I think that the language is clear. It says presentment unless there's been adjournment. I think even the respondent is not telling you that their interpretation of this section is based on the literal language. They're telling you that policy considerations should trump that language. Specifically, they're saying they need or there should be a selective application.
Counsel, is there any statute that prohibits the Secretary of State from returning a bill that has not been vetoed by the governor, that's been delivered to the Secretary of State? Is there any statute that prohibits the return of that bill to the governor upon the governor's request?
I think fairly answered, Your Honor. There's no statute that explicitly says the Secretary of State may not return a bill. There is, however, a statute, 111.08, that specifically says that matters required to be filed with her office are to be taken charge of by her and kept safe. And therefore, I think
so
that
returning to the governor is not safe.
Not in Ohio.
You have me there, Your Honor. Under the Constitution, no, it's not safe because it's not permitted by the Constitution.
I'm interested in that area as well, Ms. Richards. Is there anything that, well, doesn't the Constitution prescribe the duties of the Secretary of State to file these documents, the bills, when they're presented by the governor?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And doesn't the Constitution say that 90 days after a bill shall have been filed by the governor in the office of Secretary of State, the time period for a referendum begins? So doesn't the Constitution itself set up a system whereby there is no authority for the Secretary to unfile a document that has been filed in that office? Because another section of the Constitution, those who may claim a right to referendum, are already working off the date it's been filed.
That's correct, Your Honor. The Constitution clearly accords filing significance.
So the date that it was presented to the Secretary of State commences another section of the Constitution for other purposes that may be afoot in our state.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct.
And there's no authority in the prescription of the duties of the Secretary of State to unfile a document.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And indeed, it's hard to reconcile the unfiling of a bill with this court's holding in Maloney that obligates her to file it. In fact, the significance of the filing, I think, is incorporated in Section 16 itself. It gives the governor three options: to sign a bill, to veto a bill, or to decide neither to sign or veto and file it. And in the post-adjournment period,
Counsel, in that regard, the third option, is there any requirement for the governor to say anything if the governor chooses option three?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the one word. Is there
any requirement for the governor to say anything in print, orally, or otherwise if the governor chooses to neither sign nor to veto a bill?
No, I don't think there is. In the facts of this case, actually, the governor did make a public announcement
that
he had decided.
Right, I understand that.
But no, I'm not sure that there is any requirement because, as the court in Maloney said, once one of the options has been exercise, there's a constitutional obligation to file.
So a governor could privately decide, I don't like this bill, but I'm not going to veto it. I'm just going to send it over to the Secretary of State and do that. No public announcement, just ship it over day after he or she gets it. And then 3 or 4 days later, same governor, let's change the facts a little.
Yes, Your Honor.
Has thought about it some more and decided he or she wants to sign it or wants to veto it. It's irretrievable. Those options are irretrievably lost.
Yes, Your Honor. I am submitting to you that the Constitution provides three options. Once the executive authority has been exercised, once one of those options has been exercised, and the final act has been taken.
So the putting it to the mail to the Secretary of State is the exercising of the third option. That's the exercising of the authority.
Well, I think it provides for filing it with the Secretary of State. Frankly, I think under the facts of this case, that meant that they actually took it. And in fact, the Secretary of State's office actually accepted it. And as Exhibit C to the complaint indicates, it was filed in by the then Secretary of State. I think what...
So the putting the file stamp on it by the Secretary of State is the exercise of the governor's third option.
It's the final act. It's the consummation of the exercise of that option, yes. And I think if you look at it from the Secretary of State's viewpoint for a moment, if you look at it, let's say it's January 8th, she has three bills in front of her. One has been signed by the governor. One has been vetoed, written objections filed with her. And one has been neither signed nor vetoed and has been filed. All three bills filed. She is telling you that she can... And she has said specifically in her brief that the third option has no constitutional significance. And more importantly, she's told you she has to accord it no significance, that she can, in fact, disregard that option. Ironically, it seems to me that on one hand, she's arguing that
it's
a general...
Well, my understanding of that argument is if it is done prior to the expiration of the 10 days, that the third scenario that you described is not ripe or finished or completed until the 10 days expires, and then it's a valid finding that is on par with the first two examples that you have cited there, the veto and the signature.
But I would suggest to Your Honor that it is not the 10-day passes under this argument. It's the filing that constitutes the consummation of that exercise. It's the filing that takes it out of the executive authority because they've now made a decision. While the 10 days is going on and it hasn't been filed, certainly the governor has an option to change his mind. But once he's filed...
What did you just say?
I said if he had not filed the bill...
So in his office, he can go back and forth with himself as far as what he wants to do with it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that while he has the bill for consideration, he may consider different options,
well,
of course. But once he's filed, once he's exercised one of those options, I am suggesting to the court that that then ends his option under the Constitution.
You're saying he doesn't have to take the full 10 days before acting?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Those 10 days are for the governor to decide something. He doesn't have to take it. And in this case, at the time the 10 days expired, the 10th day, it had been filed.
Well,
it
that brings me to, that brings me to the area of disposition, which I'm confused about. If, in fact, the act of filing in the Secretary of State's office is all that the Secretary of State needs to do, then what are we to do by way of an order to compel the Secretary of State to do something else?
In this case, we need an order. We need her to be compelled to record Senate Bill 117 as a law.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's back up. You've told us that this 117 has been filed in the Secretary of State's office. Am I right?
It was filed once by Governor Taft, unfiled, and then refiled,
well,
yes.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's talk about this. These are constitutional offices.
Correct, Your Honor.
And so the governor has certain responsibilities,
yes,
and the Secretary of State has certain responsibilities, and those are delineated clearly in the Constitution and by statute. And it is the governor's responsibility to make a decision and then to submit it to the Secretary of State, who files it.
Yes, Your Honor.
That has been done with respect to this legislation. Am I correct?
It was done by Governor Taft.
And it was filed by the then Secretary of State, was it not?
Correct. Secretary of State Blackwell filed this bill in on January 5.
And you told me earlier that you did not find any authority for the Secretary of State to unfile a document. Am I right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the unfiling constitutes a nullity.
Correct, Your Honor.
So why is it that we need to compel anyone to do anything if the act of unfiling is a legal nullity and this bill has already been acted upon by the governor and filed by the Secretary of State?
Because under the facts of this case, Your Honor, the present Secretary of State, the respondent, is not treating this as a law.
Well,
it's not been sent to the Legislative Services Commission for sectional numbering. It is not, if you call
do
today.
You want us to issue an order to the Secretary of State to send House Bill 117 for sectional filing, sectional numbering?
Yeah, Your Honor, I'd like you to order her to treat this as a law, to send it for sectional filing, to publish it, distribute it within 60 days. The statute says it should have gone to the
Common
Pleas Court.
Because those are the statutory obligations of the Secretary of State, who has a bill filed in the office of Secretary of State in accordance with statute and Constitution.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And
she
therefore,
has non-discretionary.
You want the mandamus order to compel the Secretary of State to complete the duties in accordance with the statutes and the Constitution.
Precisely, Your Honor.
House Bill
117. Could we not assume that if we say the Secretary of State did not have the constitutional authority to do what she did, that that's a message to her to then comply with the statute?
I
think we really need to order her, do we? Or?
I think you do, Your Honor. I think that this is a classic case for mandamus. This is a classic case of where a public official is not performing duties imposed by law. And I would suggest to the court that this is a classic example of when a mandamus should be issued.
Counsel,
and I see my time.
I want to make sure, if we were to follow your suggestion, the referendum period then, I mean, if this was a nullity, if we were to find it was a nullity, obviously the referendum period would have already run. But if we were to say that the bill was improperly returned, what do we do with that referendum period for the public at large?
Your Honor, I think there may be two courses of action when I thought about it, and I'm sure this court could come up with others. First, you could decide that this was a very public event, very well known, and people were on notice that this may be a law or this may not be a law, and they needed to act accordingly. So you could just simply say it is a law, and she should publish it, and there is no referendum period. Conversely, you could decide that because of this unprecedented act by the respondent, that this court, in its equitable powers, needs to follow through on Section 1C of Article 2 and allow a referendum period.
I had one correction or question on 215 of the Constitution. When you responded to the Chief Justice early on, you had stated that the signing occurred December 21st. In our factual materials,
I
thought
sorry.
It was the 14th, and
no.
If so, we're talking about a 13-day delay.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think the facts are clear. It was signed on the 20th by the Speaker of the House. It was signed on the 26th by the Senate President, and it was presented the next day.
So December 14th, where in our findings of agreed facts, the clerk of the House signed it on December 14th, the engrossed version, December 14th, the Senate, the clerk of the Senate signed it. You're saying that had no significance?
That's, it, we're talking about, I think, engrossed versus enrolled, maybe, Your Honor, but I think the facts, if you look at agreed statement of fact, I'm sorry, if you look at
I was agreed looking at statement 9, 10, of fact, and 11, excuse me.
If you look at the Bottacotti affidavit, paragraph 7, that verifies the signing date by President Harris. And the affidavit at paragraph 8 then verifies the date it was presented to the governor. I know my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Richards. Mr. Dan.
Thank you, Chief Justice Moyer, and may it please the court. All we need to know about this case can be found in that Saturday morning video, I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill. And that's the place where this, where Senate Bill 117 existed until it was vetoed by Governor Strickland. Constitution, Article 2, Section 16, by its clear text, creates only two scenarios in which a bill can become a law. One is upon the signature by the governor. There's no dispute in this case that that never happened. Secondly, by the expiration of 10 days. The governor could lay it on the banks of the Scioto River for 10 days, and upon the 10th day, the bill would become a law. In this case,
That would be true even if he didn't send it to the Secretary of State. Is that your position?
That's correct, Your Honor. The filing requirement, as Justice O'Donnell referred to, as it relates to initiation of a referendum petition, or the counting of days for a referendum petition, which, by the way, is not the Secretary of State's responsibility, but the responsibility of the referendum petition circulators.
That's right.
The filing requirement as it in the Constitution only applies, and it's very clear from Article 2, Section 1C, no law passed the General Assembly. Not a bill, but a law. And since Article 16, Section 2 only allows a bill to become a law by signature or by the expiration of 10 days, this clearly was not a law, and it belonged in the dominion of the governor. The bill belonged to the governor for that entire 10-day period from presentment until the expiration of the 10th day, excluding Sundays.
Is there no finality, then, to the act if a governor determines his prerogative with respect to either approving or disapproving of a bill, and concludes the work of the Office of Governor with that legislation, regardless of outcome? Is there no finality to that act if it is delivered to a separate office and a separate constitutional officer exercises dominion and control over that filing?
Justice O'Donnell, no, it does not. To cloak that partial action by the governor in constitutional standing, I think, creates several problems. One, it's inconsistent with the text of Article 2, Section 16, which clearly says the only two ways a bill can become a law is by signature or the expiration of 10 days. Secondly, and the filing requirement is elsewhere and relates only to laws. This bill had not become a law.
My question, though, is if, in fact, the governor signed it into law and submitted it to the Secretary of State on the fourth day,
it's all good and it's done if it had been signed.
And could that governor then call the Secretary of State on the ninth day and say, I'd like it back, I've changed my mind?
No, because once that bill becomes a law by the signature of the governor, the only way, only one of two ways, then the governor relinquishes. The only way Governor Taft could have relinquished jurisdiction over this bill would be to sign it or to wait out the expiration of the 10 days. Given the time of presentment to him, the 10-day option didn't exist because he left office before the expiration of the 10th day.
So your best argument is that this bill never became a law because it wasn't signed, and the only way it could become law was by operation of the 10-day period, which had not yet expired, though the document had been delivered to the Secretary of State.
Right. Cloaking that, there's no good policy reason to cloak that partial act by Governor Taft in constitutional robes, because there's no constitutional, if the Constitution said filing or signing the bill or expiration of 10 days or filing the bill, then there'd be an argument to make that that had become a law, and then at that point in time, the governor's dominion over the bill, right to require the bill back. But absent that, the text of the Constitution actually reverts back to the supreme executive authority of the governor, which is also in the Constitution. Yes. And the Secretary of State's role, as relators pointed out, is purely ministerial.
My question and difficulty with that argument is that when we file lawsuits in a clerk's office, for example, we're going to sue the great state of Ohio, give you some more work to do. And then we say, oh, gee, I think I made a mistake. We don't go to the clerk and say, give that back to me. Mm-hmm. We have to file an additional document to dismiss it because we don't sort of abrogate the fact or the action of the filing.
Right.
And as I studied the parameters of the authority of the Secretary of State, we have a document that has been delivered by a governor of our state to a constitutional officer of our state, and there is no authority to unfile any such document.
Your Honor, even if you're correct that there was no such authority, that action...
Well, if there is authority, I'd like you to tell me.
Well, the authority... Clearly. The governor's dominion over the bill under the 10-day period that follows the presentment of the bill and allowing him to either veto or sign a bill within that 10-day period allows him dominion over the bill, and his constitutional authority as of supreme executive authority of the state overrides the statutory authority that's provided to the Secretary of State for safekeeping.
Do you have
and
a case that shows that?
Yes, the Maloney case shows that the Secretary of State's role, the Maloney versus Rhodes case, the Secretary of State's role is exclusively ministerial. It is not her role to make a quasi-judicial decision about the bill whatsoever. And frankly, her return is as inconsequential as Governor Taft's filing of the bill.
That's what Ms. Richards is arguing, that her role is ministerial, to accept it, to file it, and then to perform the rest of the statutory functions with respect to bringing it.
Even with all due respect, Your Honor, if the filing could be undone, it's too late, and the governor's time to veto or sign has already expired, and so that makes this mandamus action moot. I mean, this is a perfect case for a declaratory judgment action. That's what was brought in the Maloney versus Rhodes case.
Yes.
And in that case, the issue in the ministerial role of the Secretary of State in determining the legal validity of the governor's signature and the validity of the law absent the Senate President's signature was determined by the court, not by the Secretary of State. Under either scenario proposed by the relator in this case, either the legislature would be able to unilaterally, by timing their presentment, reduce the time that the governor has to sign or veto a bill, or cede that responsibility, that quasi-judicial responsibility, to the Secretary of State's office. Mandamus is not the appropriate remedy in this case, because even if she were to do all the things that the relator asks her to do, which, by the way, have not yet become ripe to do, right now she's in the process of processing the bills from the 125th General Assembly. This is a bill, one of the last bills of the 126th General Assembly. So there is no clear legal duty at this point that you can order her to accomplish, because she's processing those bills in order. And the question of whether or not she's going to process this bill for numeration with the Legislative Service Commission and send out to the Clerk of Courts and so forth isn't yet ripe. And the issue of the return as it relates to a mandamus action is already moot.
So she determines then, I guess, her schedule of following through with sending the bill to the Legislative Service Commission, so for that, she determines then under 1C, under 16C, when the time for a referendum starts.
No,
right?
With all due respect, Mr. Chief Justice, the Secretary of State does not determine the time to does not calculate the time for a referendum. That's calculated by a petition, somebody seeking to bring a referendum petition. And in the case,
you know how much time they have to do that, the 90 days from X date.
It's from the date of filing of a law,
okay,
not a bill. The bill was filed unsigned. It remained a bill because the expiration of the 10 days had not occurred, the signature had not occurred, a veto had not occurred. So none of those prerequisites under the clear text of the Constitution had happened. The filing of a bill is of no constitutional significance whatsoever.
Let me ask you this. If you argue strongly and your amicus argues strongly that if we read the constitutional language, that it seems clear that that the governor should have the max, we should read the language to give the governor the maximum amount of time to make his or her decision what to do with the bill. Isn't waiver consistent with that approach? The governor doesn't need 10 days. Mm-hmm. So I would guess a lot of bills get filed much before the 10-day period because the governor knows precisely what he's going to do with it. Why isn't waiver? Here, there's an argument that the governor waived the 10-day. Governor Taft waived the 10-day period, filed the bill because he knew he wasn't going to do anything else with it, and so he filed it without doing anything, and that then stops the time.
Your Honor, waiver does not apply to constitutional provisions. The constitutional provision belongs not to Governor Taft or to Governor Strickland, but to the office of the executive office, the constitutional office of governor.
Yeah, but you've argued very strongly and somewhat persuasively that the other courts in the country and we should say that the governor gets this 10 days and right. Don't infringe on the 10 days by saying that's after adjournment. That the argument. Give him 10 days. Give him 10 days. Governor says, I don't need 10 days. I can waive that constitutional provision. People can waive their constitutional rights. Governor Harris waived his constitutional right. I didn't need 10 days, so I filed it, and that's it.
With all due respect, Your Honor, you can waive your own personal constitutional rights, but you can't waive the constitutional rights of a constitutional office. No more than Attorney General Petro could waive the constitutional rights of my office prior to my taking office. On January 8th, I had all the constitutional protection afforded to me under Article 2, Section, Governor Strickland had all the constitutional protection afforded to him under Article 2, Section 16. That's why he was well within his rights to retrieve the bill and to veto the bill, because it was within the dominion of the constitutional office of governor.
But 10 days had expired since the adjournment of the General Assembly, right? There isn't any doubt, any question that no. 10 days had passed. It's a question of how you read the two 10-day provisions. And your argument is that the governor, regardless how the exact language is, ought to have 10 days. The one provision is should be read more strongly than the other provision, which gives right to the whole, and the argument is, well, the General Assembly will cut short the governor's opportunity to have 10 days if they simply delay and present it 2 days before the time period would run. But that isn't really the facts of this case at all, is it? The affidavit indicates that's when the governor and the General Assembly agreed to deliver it. So we don't have a question of a delayed presentation, at least an involuntary delayed presentation, right? Does that make a difference?
With all due respect, the presentation was delayed 14 days from enactment by the legislature, first of all, within the legislature's control. Secondly, Justice Cupp, without objection or agreement by
the governor's
office, that's a factually disputed issue in the findings of fact. Secondly, Justice Cupp, the issue of adjournment sine die was exclusively in the control of the legislature. And if you look at the clear, and the presentment was made 1 day after adjournment. What Article 2, Section 16 says is that if adjournment prevents the governor's return, then the date is calculated to 10 days from adjournment. The adjournment didn't prevent the governor's return of the bill because it wasn't presented to him until after adjournment took place. So you can look at the clear text of the Constitution to find that. There's no policy reason. And as Chief Justice Moyer pointed out, there are no courts anywhere that have established or allowed the unilateral right of one independent legislative, one independent constitutional body to unilaterally reduce the time available to another independent constitutional body. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that about Congress in the pocket veto case. Illinois and other states have also said the same thing.
So then the General Assembly is really sort of out here because they conceded to the governor's request not to deliver the bill, and that's a standard policy that's been going on probably for decades. The General Assembly waits till the governor asks for the bill to be presented. So in this case, if the General Assembly had just sort of ignored the governor's request and went ahead and dropped it on his doorstep, then we'd be okay, and that's the way the Constitution is supposed to work.
Well, again, and we have to be very careful, Justice Cupp, not to cloak non-constitutional actions in the robes of constitutionality. There's nothing in the Constitution about agreement or the governor setting the date of presentment. That is an exclusive control of the legislature. And to whatever extent, you know, if there's a waiver, perhaps they waived it. But I don't think there's waiver of a body's constitutional right, nor can members of the body or employees of the body waive those rights. They set the date of presentment unilaterally. Whether they agreed with the governor or not is irrelevant. Whether the governor filed the bill unsigned.
Mr. Dan, I'd like to take you to that particular section of 216. You stated, I think, early on that the governor could have just laid the bill aside and it would have become law in 10 days, and that there was nothing in that particular section of the Constitution speaking to filing. But the last sentence of that section says, the governor shall file with the Secretary of State every bill not returned by him to the House of Origin that becomes law without his signature. So again, to me, you know, the issue is the consequence of the filing with the Secretary of State within the 10-day period.
However, Justice Lanziger, the bill does not become law until the signature or the expiration of 10 days. The filing of a non-law with the Secretary of State is of no constitutional significance. And cloaking it in such not only unnecessarily endangers separation of powers, and not only is not a policy argument that any state has adopted to allow one body, independent constitutional body, to limit the power of a second, including the power to veto a bill, which clearly I don't think anybody disputes the Constitution gives to the governor of the state. But from the clear text of the Constitution, those are the only two ways it becomes law. Had the Constitutional Convention or the people of the state through constitutional amendment wanted filing to constitute lawmaking, then they would have put it in the Constitution. You simply can't, from the text of this Constitution, impose that theory. Now, is it,
Counselor? Then is the filing merely ministerial?
Correct.
There is. That's what you're contending. So, if the governor didn't file, you're saying it has no force or effect. It's still law because of the just the expiration of the 10 days that controls over all other instructions contained in the Constitution.
That's correct. The bill does not become a law until the signing by the governor or the filing or the expiration of the 10 days. Then a separate constitutional responsibility of the governor in Article 2, Section 1C is ignited, and that says no law passed, or that they have a duty to file the law at that point in time with the with the Secretary of State in the case of adjournment, or with the or in any case to file it with the Secretary of State. But until that 10-day period expires, that separate, and again, writ of mandamus would apply. There'd be other remedies. At that point, there would be a clear legal duty.
What's so magical about the 10 days? Why is that not to be looked at as it is in the Edwards case, that it's merely a time to allow for the governor to truly reflect on the responsibilities that are associated with this particular piece of this bill, this piece of legislation?
Oh, Your Honor, it is in the Constitution. The clear text of the Constitution establishes 10 days for the governor, and that's what the voters of the state, the constitutional conventions, when the veto was established, it was established with meaning, and the meaning gave it two effects. Governor Taft could have solved this problem by signing the bill and filing it with the Secretary of State.
And he could have done that within 24 hours of its submission.
And it would have been, we wouldn't be here today because that bill would be law and there'd be no question about it. He chose to do a non-constitutional act of filing an unsigned bill prior to the expiration of the 10 days. Only his signature or Governor Strickland's signature or the expiration of the 10 days could have made that bill law. And in fact, the opposite happened on day 10. Governor Strickland grabbed the bill, asked for the bill back from the Secretary of State in a purely ministerial
function. He was given
function.
The bill. He didn't really grab it, did he?
I'll have to ask the Secretary of State. She's here.
He's a gentle
Honor.
Person. I don't think he would have grabbed
bill. I'm sure he was a gentle and appropriate.
Mr. Dan, let me ask you. On your point.
I would have grabbed it, Your Honor.
on your point.
Well, you're a gentle person, too, Mr. Dan.
On your point of the governor's, you know, this fixed 10-day period that. The Constitution doesn't say he must. It says if a bill is not returned by the governor within 10 days accepted. it really is a default, isn't it? It's if it's not returned by him, you have 10 days, but if you don't do something within 10 days, the bill becomes law. It doesn't say you must take 10 days to make this decision, does it?
Yeah, it says that you can sign the bill or veto the bill. Governor Taft chose to do neither of those two acts. And he, in a sense, waived his right to end the governor's office's jurisdiction over the bill. It belongs to the governor for those 10 days. And that is, I think, as clear as it can be in the Constitution.
Well, if the governor submits it, though, in 5 days, it doesn't belong to the governor any longer, does it?
Once he signs it, it's a law, and he files a law. Filing a bill is not parallel to filing a signed law or filing a law that has become law because of the expiration of the 10 days.
Except the language is similar, referring to signed and vetoed, and when he does nothing with it. Again, it's if it becomes law, unless within 10 days. It's not a command that he take 10 days. It's giving him, the Constitution gives him 10 days to do something.
It's a right. That's exactly
and
right.
And your
right.
argument is that he cannot waive, he must take 10 days. Or,
no, Your Honor, no. He can act, if he wants the bill to become a law, he has every reason, every option to sign it within the 10-day period. He could sign it in 4 minutes.
This governor chose not to sign it. He didn't make a decision. Couldn't make a decision whether to sign it or veto it. So he gives us this nice legal issue.
Mr. Dan, are you saying that the governor only has the right to veto or to sign the bill? Is that your position?
He has the right to veto, sign the bill, or upon the expiration of 10 days by operation of the Constitution, the bill becomes a law. And by the way, this idea of back and forth from the Secretary of State's office has a long history in Ohio. I mean, most recently with House Bill 694, clerks from the relator came over to the Secretary of State and asked to exchange pages in Bill 694. Governor Rhodes did this from time to time.
It's interesting, in those cases, I think Governor Rhodes' case was the only one I saw on your list where the governor actually did something.
And he had great staff.
Usually it's the General Assembly, right. And they made a typo or computers problems or whatever it is. It's usually hasn't been the governor except for Governor Rhodes.
Right, right. And his excellent staff, Your Honor. Thank you.
The red light has been out for a while.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Richards, you've used your time, but you may start with 30 seconds. You may get a question.
2 points. Number one, not even the authority they rely upon, Tuttle, says that you get 10 days from presentment, from the literal language of Section 16. Number two, what they are asking you to do is to write out one of the options given in Section 16 to the governor. And the Maloney Court is very clear. The governor has three options, and after he exercises one of those options, he's to file. The question is not when this became law under the filing argument. The question is that it was filed, and when it was filed, at that point, the governor had exercised his prerogative. The time, even if you assume there was more time to go, he had lost his authority over this bill.
Your point is it's more than the filing is more than ministerial. It has legal consequences.
It is one of the constitutional requirements. Yes, Your Honor. It is clearly a constitutional requirement set forth in Section 16.
Well, what is your response to Mr. Dan's, Attorney General Dan's argument that a governor cannot waive the constitutional authority of the governor's office? An individual cannot waive the right of the office.
I think Your Honor's question pinpointed it. What the Constitution says is that he must do something within 10 days. It doesn't say that he has to do it at the end of 10 days. And when does it end here? I mean, after all, on the 8th, the 10th day, even under their argument, the bill was filed in the office of the Secretary of State. She has to keep it. She has to treat it as a bill, as a law now, and go forward. Apparently, until 11:59:59, this can go back and forth and back and forth. No, I suggest to you that Section 16 gives three options. The governor, the executive authority here, exercised one of those options, did the final act necessary to consummate that action by filing, and at that point, the executive prerogative had ended.
Counsel, the argument was that the governor only filed a bill. He didn't file a law. Had he signed it,
then it would be different. How do you distinguish between the bill and the law argument?
Well, first of all, the law, Section 111.08, says that the Secretary of State must keep safe, have charge of and keep safe, every law, resolution, and other document required to be filed with her. Maloney tells you that when one of these options, and it refers to three options, is exercised, there is a constitutional obligation to file. And at that point, Your Honor, her duties were triggered. And all she can do is allow, if you buy their argument that it went to 10 days from presentment, all she can do is let that time expire. The governor has acted. She has no right to unfile a bill. The executive prerogative has been exercised.
Counsel, if 5 days into it, the governor signs the bill, and the next morning one of his staff or he reads something in the paper that convinces him, hey, there was something in there that I didn't think through. There's something really bad that I don't want to happen in there. It's still in his office. He calls up the President of the Senate and Speaker House and says, can you sign another one and send it over? What's the legal constitutional consequences of his act of signing the first one if he's still got it there in his office?
Well, again, a literal reading, which is what I believe this court has always advocated, a literal reading of the Constitution would say that when the governor signs the bill, it becomes the original bill, it becomes law. Post-adjournment, that's not so with regard to vetoing it. He has to file written objections or he has to file it without having signed or vetoed. So there is a distinction there. I acknowledge that. But I still believe it's of significance that the governor's given three options. And on two of these options, post-adjournment, two of these options, it's only effective if he files. When he files, he's lost his executive prerogative over that bill. And certainly, the Secretary of State, whose duties clearly under Maloney are non-discretionary, ministerial, has no right to do anything with that bill but keep it safe, have that become law. I would say it happened already, but even if you don't go with the straightforward language of Section 16, it certainly became law on the 10th day after presentment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Richards. Thank you, counsel, for excellent arguments. The case is dismissed. You'll be advised of our opinion.